This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen. And Adam, first and foremost, happy March Madness.
Did you
fill out a bracket?
I didn't, but we are in Hartford, my father and I, watching Ja Morant. I mean, my God, that guy's an incredible player. He's so much fun to watch. And I hope they beat Florida State so they can keep playing and more people get to see him.
Yeah, I can't believe he ended up there. Of all, where is it again?
It's in Kentucky. It's at Florida State. So
yeah.
But he was a super late bloomer. He couldn't even dunk until his senior year.
Oh, wow.
So that's the only way a guy like that ends up there. It's pretty cool. That they got some nice complimentary pieces, though. They're a fun team to watch. They share the ball. Good shooters. They can rebound. They're a nice team.
Yeah, now we're the March Madness podcast. we're changing that. But let's get back to football, where, you know, the draft, we're 5 weeks away now, about. And, you know, a lot of pro days happening now, obviously. BC, UMass had their pro days over the last couple of days. Obviously, that clip of Dante Scarnecchia working out Chris Lindstrom is pretty much everywhere at this point. So that's very interesting from a Patriots perspective. But we're going to take a look at the running backs today. And although the Patriots don't have an immediate need at running back, it's probably one of their positions where they're a little bit lower in need, maybe one of the lowest besides maybe cornerback. I still think that another piece or another running back to be a third or fourth wheel is maybe in the cards here for New England at some point in this draft. Probably not early, because they took a running back in the first round, as all of us know. But you know, somewhere early day three to later on day, a day three guy, I think, is really what we're looking at. But we're going to start with a guy that I think is probably going to go earlier, and probably around the third or fourth round maybe, and that is with Damien Harris out of Alabama, who I just love. I think he's just a great kid overall. Talking to him at the combine, I think that he is very mature. I mean, you talk to these Alabama guys, Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, there's something different about them. They're just so experienced with the whole media thing and being in the spotlight. But what did you like about Harris on the tape?
Well, I mean, just to start off with, they use so many backs, so he's coming into the league. I mean, a lot of the guys we're going to be talking about are coming in with a lot of injury history. And Harris seems to be, somebody who shared carries, made the most of them. He's versatile. He's good between the tackles, and he's got a little bit of speed. He's not a burner, I wouldn't say, but he's got good size to him. I think he's got the body of an NFL running back. And I like his cuts between the tackles. I think he's got pretty decent vision. He finishes his runs downhill. I like him a lot. He brings a lot to the table.
Yeah, I think the first point that you made about him being in a pretty loaded backfield for most of his time there at Bama, obviously with Josh Jacobs this past year, but he was in the backfield with Bo Scarborough and Kenyon Drake and some really good NFL caliber running backs, which the point is, it means that if he has a game, and he said this at the combine, where he only has five carries, but that's what's in the best interest of the team, that he's used to that. You know, he's used to that kind of internal competition, a healthy competition, and a lot of the things that you kind of hear about coming out of New England, where, we have a lot of depth on this team, a lot of veteran players on this team that are going to push the rookies to earn their spot. And he's fully prepared to do that. So I think that that's an interesting fit there, just from a personality or a character standpoint. But on the field, I think that he's a good fit with Sony too, just kind of as working off of each other. What I like most about him is that he kind of knows who he is. He doesn't think that he's this like explosive guy that's going to get to the edge.
No,
he doesn't think that he needs to dance in the backfield and make guys miss in the phone booth. He knows he's a downhill get upfield, get the yards that I'm supposed to get type of running back. And he does it really well. And he's actually got some nice long strides to him, I think. And he finishes good, you know, and instincts through contact and stuff like that. He's not going to necessarily jump cut the, you know, out of the way or anything, but he kind of has these like little slithering type moves.
Right.
Where he kind of angles himself and he has that kind of flexibility to be able to do that. So I really like him overall as a prospect. I think he's a little bit more powerful, you know, just in the pads than Sony is maybe as well, and maybe could handle some of the short yardage duties that the Patriots have kind of struggled to find a back for last season. So I think there's a lot of things to like about him. And I really think that the whole Alabama thing, even though, you know, the Patriots don't necessarily just draft from Bama or anything like that, obviously, just having that experience of a guy that is, you know, going to overall be okay with not necessarily being a focal point of the game plan every single week, and understand that competition, I think is really big. All right. Moving on to the next guy here, who we were talking about this earlier today with Bryce Love out of Stanford, how much of a difference a year makes with this guy.
Yeah.
You know, a year ago, I feel like he was coming off that Heisman caliber season. We might've been talking about him, you know, as the best running back in this class. Now the durability concerns, some of the other stuff, and all of a sudden he's, you know, kind of in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, I really have questions about his durability, not just because of the injuries he's already suffered, but I don't think, you know, you just look at him and he looks a little lean in the lower body.
Especially his legs,
It's like his legs are small. But when he comes into the league, they're not going to use him like they did at Stanford, which is, you know, try to give him 25, you know, carries a game. So, he's a guy that ran in a power scheme at Stanford. But I think if he's a zone back, he can be pretty effective that way too. I think he's good working the edges. He's got great speed. When he gets to the second level, he can really pull away from guys. And I think when he plants his foot, and goes, he gets to his top end speed very quickly.
Yeah.
And I think those are really good traits for any NFL back. So, if he can stay healthy and, you know, get to a team that's not going to, you know, overuse him, I think he can be really effective. And, you know, if he came to a team like the Patriots, you know, that would be a, you know, a nice fit.
Yeah, I feel like in a, like, 10 carry, you know, situation where he's averaging like 10 carries a game and he's just coming in the game as more of a change of pace guy than a future guy, then that's really a nice little role for him. And I think that, you know, the things that stand out, you watch that Notre Dame game, for example, where he had a really good game this past year and looked like the guy that he was the year before when he almost won the Heisman Trophy. That was the type of running back that you look at. Great intelligence and processing speed, balance through contact, that sudden burst and acceleration, the ability to move laterally and do jump cut type stuff. That's where, like, kind of a lot of the Deion Lewis comparisons, I think, come from. I know that comparison has been floated around a lot. He's always moving his feet. He's always the ability to kind of wiggle and be able to make guys miss. I think that one of the other things that's rare, and this is kind of a, you know, nuance thing though, is that he always is square to the guy, and even when he's moving laterally, he's still able to keep himself square, which avoids some of the big hits that you might, you know, see from a guy that doesn't necessarily always have his eyes forward. So I think that there's some really nice little things about Bryce Love's game and all that stuff that he almost won the Heisman with, or that he really stood out last year when he was healthy, still exist, you know? I mean, he still has all those physical abilities. It's just going to be a matter of how much can he stay on the field. And I think if you manage his workload, you're going to be fine. And he kind of reminds me more of a guy like a Philip Lindsay than a Deion Lewis.
That's a good one.
Where you can, if you use him in that role, and I'm not necessarily talking solely playing style, I'm more talking about the fact that Denver didn't try to feed Philip Lindsay the ball last year 30 times a game. They knew that if they fed it to him, though, 10 to 15 times a game, he was going to average 6 yards a carry because he's so explosive. And I think that that's kind of a similar way that you can go about it with Bryce Love and hopefully keep him healthy as well. He is a perfect running back by committee type candidate. And I also think he can catch the ball out of the backfield a little bit, too.
They didn't do that a ton with him, but when they did, he was good. You know, get him to the edge. You know,
It's interesting that they didn't, because they did so much of it with McCaffrey that you would think that would still continue when you have such an athletic back like Bryce, but it didn't happen for him like that. But I think that there's some legs to, you know, people that are asking about him for the Patriots kind of in that day three range, because he falls because of the injury concerns and stuff like that. That would be a very, really nice pickup for him, I think. And a guy that, you know, we talk about these receivers and the tight ends, how they need pass catchers. They just need playmakers, you know? Right. And if you find playmakers out of the backfield instead of it being a receiver or a tight end, then so be it. You know, Josh McDaniels will figure out ways to put up points with four running backs on the field if he has to. I have a lot of confidence in that. So,
I think the question you got to ask yourself is, do you want peak Bryce Love or do you want peak Rex Burkhead? I think I'll take peak Bryce Love over that.
Yeah, I think that we're at a – it's a great point, because we're at a crossroads now with Rex Burkhead, where half of – I'm generalizing here, but half of Patriots Nation thinks that Rex Burkhead is really a good back, and half of Patriots Nation thinks he sucks.
Right.
And it's a very polarizing topic right now, and obviously the truth is somewhere in the middle, but they can upgrade over Rex Burkhead.
100%.
Like, I think that is very, very clear. What I like most about Rex is his ability in the passing game. I still think he's a better receiver than he is a running back.
Right.
But I think that, you know, having a guy that can really, you know, they have James White, who's kind of solely a receiver. Having a guy that can do a little bit of both and maybe be a little bit more of a high-level ball carrier is to back up Sony, other than Rex Burkhead, I think is a much better usage of that kind of backup running back role. Than what we're seeing with Rex. All right, let's move on to this next guy, who's another big injury concern. Rodney Anderson out of Oklahoma. Not that Rodney Harrison. Every single time I see Rodney, I guess my brain jumps to Rodney Harrison. Rodney Anderson out of Oklahoma, who I just absolutely love, but the guy just can't stay healthy. You know,
right.
Can't stay on the field. And it's not just minor little bumps and bruises. These are like serious, like, you know, herniated discs type injuries that he's had over the years.
Yeah. I like him. If he was healthy, he'd be one of my favorite guys in this class. Just because I like his vision between the tackles.
Yeah.
Like where he sees holes where other guys might not. His Georgia tape from not this past year, but the year before was exceptional.
Yeah.
You know, and he was pulling away from guys, you know, fast guys on some of his runs. He's got pretty decent size. I like his running style. Like he's, you know, he's got good vision, and then he doesn't mess around and goes straight ahead. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't go too laterally, on some of these. Once he gets to the second and third level, he goes straight downhill. And, you know, I think he's somebody that could be used in the passing game a little bit if they wanted to. I don't think that's his forte, but I think he could be capable at that. But again, his injuries, you know, if you're already getting into the NFL with injuries, it's just a tough go. But if you take him like a fully healthy Rodney Anderson, I mean, the guy can really play. And like I said, that Georgia film was tremendous. You know, he gave them tons of problems in the first half of that game.
Yeah.
So he's a good player.
Yeah. So I have in my notes here, season ending injuries in 2018, 2016, and 2015.
Cool.
So 3 out of 4 years. And these are not, like I said earlier, it's ACL, a neck injury, and a broken fibula.
Oh.
So these are like serious injuries.
Yeah.
To the point where, I mean, I have a fifth-round grade on his tape. I think it's probably a little bit better than that. He is borderline undraftable because of those injuries, I think.
Yeah.
You know, when you have that kind of injury history, I think that a team will take him because his talent is just too good that if you can keep him healthy, it's just worth the risk on day three. But, you know, a guy that's a little bit less talented than him probably goes undrafted. I think that he has a really nice blend of power, balance, explosiveness.
Yeah.
You know, he's got that perfect blend of he's got enough zip to, you know, he can pull away when he needs to. He's got power to lower the pads and finish through contact, and he's got some great contact balance as well. I also think that, you know, he's kind of got that loose hip to him, kind of like Damian Harris has, where he just kind of wiggles and slithers his way around people. He's not necessarily like a Bryce Love, obviously, who's going to be jump cutting and doing all sorts of dancing and stuff like that. But he's kind of got that second and third level elusiveness where he can kind of separate from guys. And like you said, he's great at just finding open space. And that Oklahoma offense is wide open all the time anyway. So that is helpful. But he's really good at, you know, being able to do that. And there was some stuff on his tape where he's lining up out wide. He's lining up in the slot. I agree that it's not necessarily, you know, going to be a strong suit of his. But I think that he has experience in the passing game as a catcher, which I think can help in that regard too. I mean, there's reps where he's, you know, winning on the outside as like an outside receiver, which is pretty impressive for a guy of his size. So I think that there is some capabilities there in the passing game as well, even if it's not like, you know, he's not some elite pass catcher like some of the guys that we might get to here in a little bit. But man, if he wasn't injured, I think that he is a perfect fit in the Patriots backfield. I really do. I just, you know, and they're not they've taken their chances on injury guys plenty of times. So maybe it is something that they're willing to do. You know, obviously Gronk was an injury guy. Dominique Easley, we know all about that one.
Right.
Being an injury guy. There's plenty of guys that they've taken chances on that have had injury history. All right. This next guy, Miles Sanders out of Penn State, was, you know, kind of just stuck behind Saquon Barkley until this past season, until Saquon obviously moved on to the NFL. He is kind of been referred to as like Saquon Light. Like, he's not quite as freaky of an athlete as Saquon is, but he has that. So no one is really.
Yeah.
But he has that same kind of low center of gravity, very like thick thighs, thick in the lower body, and the ability, you see that explosiveness. He just, I think he has the lateral similarities to Saquon. He has the jump cuts and ability to jump cut through contact and run through contact. He just doesn't have that instant acceleration where after he makes a cut, Saquon can make a cut and then is gone 60 yards to the half. This guy, it takes a little bit longer for him to build that speed up.
Yeah, it's interesting watching Sanders' tape, because sometimes he's, you know, patient and waits for the hole to open up, and other times once he, I mean, I don't always agree with all the evaluations on that NFL.com, but they're usually pretty spot on. And something that I read, I think it was a scout quote or something that I think was really spot on, was they said something about, you know, he tries to do stuff that Saquon does without Saquon's athleticism. Like, there's a bunch of times in his film where he's jumping over guys, and it's like, dude, just go forward.
Yeah.
You know? So, but but I do think he does have that good lateral quickness. He had a great combine, you know, and I think his combine really did help his stock. I think he's a good player. He played in a very RPO heavy offense. And so I think he's, you know, a versatile guy. I think you can use him in the pass game. He's got a nice build to him. I don't think he's somebody that's going to break down against NFL defenses. He's just got that look to him like an NFL back. So, you know, whether or not, you know, I'm just curious to how his running style will translate without the elite athleticism that Barkley had.
Yeah.
But I think he's, I think he can be an effective pro. I don't think he's necessarily, you know, got, you know, star potential, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the biggest, other than some of the things that you pointed out, concerns for me, just from a Patriots perspective, is he kind of reminds me a little bit of Sony.
Yeah.
Just the way that he's built and the fact that he's very good at running through contact, and he's got that lower half that's, you know, obviously we've seen Sony's thighs are gigantic, but he doesn't quite have that top level explosion and
right,
ability to separate from an NFL defensive back, you know, and run away from people, I guess is right, what I'm trying to say. So he has a little bit of that same, you know, kind of makeup to him, but mm-hmm, I think he's a little bit more agile than Sony is and maybe a little less bursty. So what I really like about him, though, is I think that he does have some good vision and decision making. He does tend to kind of do a little bit of what Saquon does and tries to do a little bit too much at times. But when he's getting downhill and he's getting through the line of scrimmage, I think he's pretty good at kind of finding those creases. And I really like how he's able to stack moves. Like, he can make like three or four moves in a row.
Yeah.
To get around guys and get away from guys. That's not easy to do, the ability to, you know, stop, start, and change directions and then reset and then do it over again. You know, there's some runs on his tape where he jump cuts a guy, then he, you know, runs around another guy, and then he's in the end zone, you know, that kind of stuff. The ability to stack moves is really unique and difficult to do. I think he's got some three down back potential as well, to play, you know, on third down pass protection, and also to be able to catch the ball out of the backfield. I really just think it is the dancing and the lack of the breakaway speed that, you know, kind of knock him a little bit down my board, and maybe some issues with ball security as well. But I kind of, the ball security thing, I think, can be coached out of people.
Right.
So yeah. I don't worry about it quite as much as some other people do. But I definitely think that quote, I saw it too on NFL.com, where he tries to be like Saquon without Saquon's gift,
right,
is like kind of true. He was actually asked about that at the combine, and he didn't like it too much, as you probably would expect. And you know, said, "Ah, no, I'm my own guy. I'm nothing like Saquon. That's ridiculous, yada yada." But when you watch him, you do kind of look to yourself and you say, "Yeah, you know, this guy's kind of like Saquon Barkley at 65% of Saquon."
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he has that same kind of running style, low center of gravity, big lower body, explosive in the laterally, but not necessarily straight line speed. So, you know, there's things to like about him, though. And I think that, you know, his combine 100% helped him a lot.
Yeah.
He ran a really, really nice combine, tested extremely well, especially in the three cone. He blew it out of the water. So I think there's going to be some teams that have him pretty high on their boards. I have him lower. I mean, I had a fourth, fifth round grade on him. I think he's probably going in the third or fourth round.
I agree. Yeah, I think he's got better combine stats than film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So so I think a team is going to reach on him a little bit.
Yeah, and he's also kind of, you know, obviously because he's behind Saquon, a little bit of a one-hit wonder. You know, he had one really good season, his last season, obviously, at Penn State without Saquon there. But he did show some flashes, you know, spelling Saquon in the earlier years of his career. And I think that people knew that he was kind of just stuck behind him and was just waiting for his turn. You always kind of feel for those types of guys, because if he had went to another school, he probably is a stud, you know, for a couple of years. But it just, because he was behind maybe one of the best running backs of the last decade, just in terms of a prospect in the draft, you know, it's difficult. All right, this next guy here, we're trying to start to get a little bit into like the sleeper range here, and guys that are a little bit later in the draft on day three, where I think the Patriots would be more interested in taking a running back. Trayvon Williams from A&M. I love this guy. I really love him. I love the tape, but also apparently he was a big time leader
on
that team, a team captain
100%.
And a vocal leader for the Aggies and that Aggies offense. And a lot of, you know, just talking to people about him, saying that he was kind of the guy that would stand up in the locker room and like give the rah-rah speech if it was necessary. And, you know, that it wasn't, you know, Kellen Mond or Jay Sternberger or any of the other NFL talent that they had on that team. It was him.
Yeah, and the other thing I like is he played in Jimbo Fisher's offense this past year, and that's a complete offense, that where you ask a little bit of everything from everyone. And, you know, even the Alabama film where he didn't put up a ton of yards, it was only like when he was running between the tackles, he was running into three guys, you know, and but when they got him on the edge, he would get the edge. And he's small, but I think, you know, he can really play in sort of all phases as a running back, because, you know, he's been productive in the SEC for his whole career. He's a good receiver, and for his size, he blocks really well.
Yeah.
And so he's, you know, you can't argue against his production against the best players in the country. He's just been putting up good numbers his whole career. And so I really like him. You know, he killed LSU in that game.
Yeah.
You know, he's for a guy that small, he runs with a lot of power.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen him truck guys out there. So I'm excited to see where he goes and how his career blossoms, because I think he's a really nice player. You know, he's not somebody that's going to come off the bus and you're going to look at and see as a total stud from a size standpoint, but he can play.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like he's one of those guys that you can put him on the field for three downs probably right away.
Yeah.
Which I really like. He's already really good pass protector, like you said, which is surprising for his size, but he's really good at it. And he's really reliable as a pass catcher out of the backfield too. So I think that this guy is early on in his career, he's probably a pass catching back. He's probably a passing down back and a guy that you really use on third down and passing situations because of that familiarity with catching the ball and also in pass protection. But as a runner, he's a really good at eluding defenders, both as a, you know, in the open field as a pass catcher and as a running back and ball carrier. Really good ability to stack moves, kind of you know, that same elusiveness and jump cut ability too in the open field. He's got some good patience to him, I think, too, to not, you know, hit the kind of let his blocking develop. And in that pro style system, you know, this isn't one cut like in a you know, in like a spread offense with a lot of RPOs and a lot of outside zone where like you're just one cut in there all day long. This is a more complicated offense than that for a running back especially. So he has some feel and experience for that as well. I just think that if you're looking for a guy on day three, yeah, he's not, you know, he had a good combine workout. I don't think that he's like this elite athlete by any means, but no. He's a very good athlete. He does kind of run a little bit at one speed. He doesn't really, you know, shift many gears or anything like that. But I really think that, you know, this is the guy that I had circled for the Pats for a long time, because this is the type of guy that, you know, just fits in well to kind of running with three or four different backs in the backfield and having Sony really be the more featured guy. And you bring this guy in as kind of like a spell back and a guy on passing downs that can play there too, and you get solid production. That's kind of what you need right now. You don't need a guy, you don't need to go and draft Josh Jacobs, right? You drafted your Josh Jacobs last year. So this is the type of guy that you can get that kind of add up and get a little bit more of a change of pace. I think that he's got a little bit more straight line speed than a guy like Sony Michel does, so that would help the Patriots out a lot. And then like I said, the intangibles are off the charts, you know, the leadership skills, and I think he would just fit in really nicely in New England.
Yeah, and the other thing, I touched on it a little bit, but you know, I think it's going to be with when people look at this guy, when general managers and these decision makers during the draft, they're going to be weighing, you know, his film and production versus the numbers, measurables, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it depends on what you value. Because from a production standpoint and from, you know, all those intangibles and stuff like that, I mean, he's really got it, you know.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of his. I think really the only, you know, main concern I have, it's not even a concern, it's just, you know, he's not going to be your feature back. don't think. You know, he's not going to be the guy that's going to, you know, get all the touches. He's a little bit smaller. He's got a little bit of a smaller frame, too. So he's not going to necessarily withstand all of that type of stuff. But, I mean, in terms of just putting him into a backfield, like a New England backfield where there, you just got a bunch of guys out there, you know, he's kind of the guy that I had circled for him for a long time. And I think they can get him in somewhere like, you know, the fifth, sixth, seventh round, somewhere late in the draft. I don't think that he's going to be overdrafted necessarily. All right. Lastly here, we're moving on to the sleepers.
Same team.
You guys that you got a same team sleeper?
Yeah. No,
Okay, I got you now. You know, I think that this guy really has a ton of potential. The one I'm going with here, and I also love his kick return ability. I mean, this is that's really what kind of separates Tony Pollard for me from some of these other late round guys. Is he is arguably the best kick returner in college football history. So that right there, you know, Bill Belichick loves special teams, but on top of that, they just lost Cordarrelle Patterson, obviously, who was their kick returner. This guy could step right in and basically take that role on day one, I would say. He had 7 kick return touchdowns in college, which is the NCAA record. Well, actually ties for the NCAA record with a couple of other guys. Some of the names, Percy Harvin, who's pretty good. Rashard Penny, he had a bunch as well at San Diego State. But Tony Pollard, I mean, I think you liked it. I think I convinced you.
Yes. Yeah, well, the thing first off, I love that conference right now. I mean, you got Houston, UCF, South Florida, Memphis, Navy. I mean, you got some really good mid-major programs. You know, and Memphis has really come on lately, and they are so good at finding those guys that – the SEC and the ACC don't offer or whatever. And, you know, when I watched Pollard's film, I think it was the Central Florida game. He was lining up in the slot.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, and they're moving him around. They're having a direct snap wildcat, you know, running back, you know, and this guy is good at everything, you know, and I think he has, you know, obviously he's explosive with his in the return game. You know, the guy is somebody that can come in and, you know, and heat up and really make plays for you. I don't think he's exceptionally big, but he doesn't really have to be with his speed and his elusiveness. I just think he's a really versatile player. And if you're talking about the Patriots, I mean, they love, you know, a versatile player. I mean, this guy's already done a lot of different things. So he comes to New England and, you know, they split him out wide. He's done that. You know, they put him in the slot. He's done that. You know, he can do so many different things. And I think that's really going to serve him well wherever he goes.
Yeah, I mean, really the thing is that if you're going to get drafted in as a running back right now for the Patriots and what is a pretty loaded backfield with Sony and James White, you're going to have some sort of niche, right? Like you're going to have to find your way on the team with some sort of elite skill, and his kick returning ability is going to do that for him. He's going to be able to make the team solely as a kick returner, I would say, if the Patriots draft him or even if he gets to the UDFAs and he gets signed as a UDFA. And the second thing is he's got over 100 career catches. So this guy really can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can line up anywhere, slot outside, just like you said. So you can use him in that role as well. I mean, I just think that, listen, that Memphis offense, and I know we're going to talk more Memphis here in a second, but that Memphis offense is a wide open spread system.
So much fun.
Right? And they just put up points. I mean, they put up yards and they put up points, and the whole thing is just extremely explosive. So you had your guy who we're going to talk about here in a second, and you had Tony Pollard returning kicks, and he's returning kicks 30 yards a pop and 7 touchdowns. And then you get on offense and it's just like, it's like a track meet on offense too. Yeah. And that guy kind of fit, Tony Pollard really fit that kind of makeup. And I just think that, like I said, immediately he's a prime candidate to be your day one, week one kick returner. And then I think long term, he's just kind of like a playmaker weapon that you can put in your offense.
Yeah, 100%. he's good. And like you said, that off, they're fun to watch. That whole conference, that whole conference is fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, you
it's got an under the radar conference. It really is.
You know, I mean, even, you know, even though Houston didn't have a great year this year, I mean, they're such a hotbed of talent. Some of those places, I mean, how many great players come out of Houston? How many great players come out of Memphis? You know, it's, you know, South Florida, Central Florida. I mean, there's some good players in that conference.
Yeah, I got one guy named Ed Oliver who might be the number one pick in the draft if he was a little bit taller.
Right.
Yeah, it's draft season when you know that you're arguing whether a guy like Ed Oliver is worth a top 10 pick just because he's arms are a little shorter.
Yeah.
Like 10 pounds too skinny. All right, give me your guy.
And as you know, we've been discussing this, Darrell Henderson.
Oh, man.
From Memphis.
Yeah. This guy's awesome.
Like I tweeted this morning, he's the most fun tape to watch out of any of the running backs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can say that, you know, he gets stopped at the line of scrimmage a little bit too much, but once he gets past that first level, he has such a great feel for finding the angles to make it tough to get him at that second and third level.
Yeah.
He pulls away. Like, you know, like if there's a safety and a cornerback, you know, 10, 15 yards away, he'll pick the perfect angle to make it so it neither one of them gets to him. He's got great secondary moves. He's got these great subtle fakes. And he just makes these 5-yard gains into 75-yard gains. I think he averaged something like 8 yards per carry.
Wow.
Or 9 or something close to it. I mean, he's just a home run hitter. And you texted me that possible player comp is like a Kareem Hunt. Like, he's got that kind of explosiveness. You put him in his own blocking scheme and he's gone, you know, and he's, you know, he's got decent size to him. He didn't run a great 40, but his football speed's off the charts because, you know, he just has, you know, just those great cuts. And like you were saying, you know, his acceleration, his initial burst.
Yeah.
Every single cut he makes, he gets faster.
Yeah.
You know? And he's so hard to defend once he gets to that second level, man. He really knows how to make those cuts into the open space. He's really, really fun to watch.
Yeah, a home run hitter is exactly the way to describe this guy. He definitely led the nation in like explosive runs last year, or at least this draft class. I can't remember the stat exactly, but he's just a home run hitter. I mean, he can take it 60 yards to the house on any given play. It's really how it feels every single time he touches the ball. His 40 wasn't great. It was his 10-yard split that was just off the charts, which is, you know, measures kind of that initial burst, that
right.
Like 10 yards of burst, you know, and I said this to you too, is the 40, it's becoming a little bit, I think, outdated for running backs. Not that it's not, you know, listen, it's outdated in a lot of ways for a lot of people. We all love the combine. We love watching the event. It's a great event, but point blank, it's much more important with these running backs what they do on the tape and how they show their play speed than what they do running a 40 in spandex. It just really is. And there's a long line at this point of examples of guys that, like Harris Henderson, that ran kind of in the mid 4.5s, I believe he was, and it was, you know, kind of looked at like they were slow, but really the main thing is you look at these guys like Dalvin Cook and Kareem Hunt, and the list goes on and on of really good running backs in the league that didn't run great 40s and still were just really good backs.
Yeah,
and I think that is you know him to a T, and really, I mean, he's electric. He's really just electric. He's my RB2 right now behind Josh Jacobs. I think he's the second best running back in the draft. The only hesitation that I have with him, and this is a kind of a college back knock for guys that didn't play against like elite defenses every week, is that some of his production is just against wide open holes. You know, he's just running through these kind of cratered size holes where already in the open field. But what I like about it is that even though the first 5 to 8 yards, maybe he goes untouched, he's got that ability to get around the secondary players, you know, the guys on the second and third level, to turn, like you said, those 5 or 6 yard runs that he's probably going to get automatically into 60 yard runs. Yeah. So that's kind of what separates him. But there, that, like I said, with Tony Pollard, it's just a wide open spread. And listen, we talked about this too when we were talking about this guy. For the life of me, I don't understand why more NFL teams don't do it. You know, don't spread defenses out and
right.
fall down their throats like these college offenses do. Because Memphis is a perfect example. They run all over people out of spread, out of like, you know, shotgun and you know, single back formations. And
yeah, stuff spread like that. Spread the field. Have, you know, only one or two guys in the box and make them defend a big running back or a fast running back. And, you know, we're talking about teams like a team like Buffalo. Why not?
Yeah.
You know, you got a good quarterback who can run in terms of running, can't really throw accurately, but spread the field and give it to a stud running back and see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, when you don't, with these teams that don't have great quarterbacks, got to figure out another way to do it. And there's ways to do it, you know, in a sort of modern way, where you create a lot of space on the field and you sort of empty the box and see if the, defense can take a chance arm tackling some of these guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so successful in college. Why not give it a shot in the pros?
Yeah, I think that the main reason is that people are stubborn.
Yeah,
people are stubborn, and a lot of these coaches, and we're not saying that we know better than the NFL coaches or anything like that, but a lot of people are stubborn, and they have won or been successful or gotten to where they are as coaches with one system, and they're just afraid to then go and change it and risk, you know, what the repercussions. But I also lowballed Henderson a little bit on his 40. He was a 4.49, which is pretty fast. So that he's definitely got speed. And I just think that, you know, in today's NFL, and a lot of these guys in college too, are more comfortable in these types of systems. It's all about two things. It's about matchups and spacing. You know, the ability to find open space and the ability to get matchups. And that's exactly what Memphis does all day long with their guys. And, and they do it really, really well. Henderson, I think that he's going to go pretty early. I think he's a day two guy. Maybe he sneaks into round 4 just because this running back class, I wanted to say it off the top and I forgot. I like it. It's not great.
Yeah, it's not elite.
It's not elite. Last year, kind of for reference, last year I would have had 5 running backs ahead of Josh Jacobs.
Yep.
So that is, kind of where we're at. Obviously, Saquon Barkley is a significantly better prospect than anybody that we're talking about today, or even Jacobs. But even guys like Nick Chubb and Sony and Darius Geis, those guys, I think Rashard Penny might have been a better prospect than most of these guys as well. So, this is a very it's a decent running back class. It's definitely not the worst running back class ever or anything like that. It's just not elite, and there's not a generational running back talent
right
in this class, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
But I guarantee Henderson's going to be one of those fantasy football guys where you snatch him up in the later rounds, and all of a sudden
If he goes to a team that already, because he's not a first round pick where he's going to go to a bad team early in the draft or something like that, he's going to be able to, hopefully find a nice home in an offense that will use his skill set to the best of its abilities. Just thinking off the top of my head, something like a Kyle Shanahan, Fleur type, like in Green Bay, maybe. Or how about him replacing Mark Ingram in New Orleans? With Alvin Kamara.
That's scary. And right, Tevin Coleman's no longer at Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too. Yeah. That was now that you say that, that was my other Kyle Shanahan coaching tree type example.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
And the other thing about him is he's listed at 5'8", 208. But he kind of looks bigger in terms of his build.
Yeah.
He's kind of stocky looking.
And he's, once you get up to that top speed, you're not going to get in front of that.
Yeah, he's so fun to watch.
Yeah.
He's so much fun to watch. And Memphis in general, like you said, they're, you know.
We love Memphis, apparently.
They're fun, man. All those teams kind of play that way, or most of them.
Yeah.
South Florida's like that. Central Florida's like that. You know, that league is kind of like, you know, those wide open plays. And then you can throw on Navy and they're running the option and stuff. It's just a fun league.
Yeah. One more just name I just want to throw out there. I haven't done a ton of homework on this guy, but I've seen him mocked in a lot of those 7-round mock drafts that some of the other beat writers have done. And it's James Williams out of Washington State. Mm-hmm. He's another pass catching back. Another guy that would fit in really nicely as a pass catcher. Ran a decent 3-cone. I'm looking at his mock draftable right now. He ran a decent 3-cone. Can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's kind of like a Tony Pollard-ish type guy as well. So maybe another name there. I throw it out a lot. Especially when I was doing the threads of all the running backs on Twitter and doing my running back grades, and everyone's like, "Why are you talking about running backs? Like, they're not going to draft a running back." First of all, they have 12 picks, so they're going to draft a position that you're not saying is a need, right? Like, they're going to – they have too many picks to not. So whether you think cornerback isn't a need or running back isn't a need, they're going to take at least one at that position, I would think. And I think that, you know, long term, and when you're looking at a guy that maybe, you know, is going to be here for 4 years, you start to think of, you know, okay, what's going to happen to Rex Burkhead in a year? What's going to happen, who's the fourth running back on the depth chart? Because last year they had four, and then Jeremy Hill tore his ACL in week one, and they had Cordero Patterson playing running back for a few weeks
right
in the middle of the season because they ran out of depth. So I think that they need another body. They need another back. And you know, one of these guys that we talked about today, hopefully we get it right. And one of these guys is one of the guys that they are targeting. But I definitely think that it's in the realm of possibility that they take another running back.
And here's the point that people sort of forget. You're drafting guys not necessarily always based on need to begin with.
Right.
And you're always looking to upgrade.
Yeah.
If you can get a guy who's better than Rex Burkhead and you can put, you know, that guy as your third back and put Rex Burkhead as your fourth back, you do it.
Right.
You know, it's a no brainer. I mean, there's obviously other positions that are, you know, bigger needs and stuff like that, but you want talent on the field at every position. And if you can get, you know, a talented player on your team, you take him.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's what the draft's all about. Same in, you know, college recruiting, you know, even if they don't draft a guy and they pick one of these dudes, as a free agent, you know, it's worth doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's a big part of the draft process is, you know, Bill Belichick talks about it all the time. The Patriots don't draft on need. They draft the best player available, the guy that they think that's going to come in and help the team the most to win a Super Bowl. That's really the only goal. So whether that's a running back or a wide receiver or a tight end or a quarterback or whatever the case may be, that's what they're going to do if they think that he's the best player, you know, at the time that they're going to pick. So it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, and put it this way, if that player comp comes through, if Daryl Henderson is your next Kareem Hunt,
Do you
pass on him?
Right.
I don't think so.
Right.
You know?
Right. So. Yeah. As long as he's not Kareem Hunt off the field.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we'll be all right. Yeah. I think that, you know, the cool thing about running backs is that they're – You as much as I love Sony as a prospect, and this isn't some big thing about taking running backs in the first round that I'm trying to go on right now, but I think that the cool thing about running backs is that there are – every year there's that guy in like the fourth round that nobody is really thinking about or nobody really knows about, and they get picked up and they're just, you know, Pro Bowlers instantly.
Right. And wasn't Lindsay undrafted?
Yeah, Phillip Lindsay went undrafted and was a Pro Bowler. Biggest thing is, you know, as much as the running back thing, I think that people go too far when they say running backs don't matter. Like, I think that that's too far the other direction.
Yeah.
But I do think that...
Tell that to the Cowboys.
Yeah, I do think that there's a lot... Well, see, the Cowboys, not to go on a tangent here about the Cowboys, but the Cowboys could have had Jalen Ramsey over Zeke Elliott.
Right. And
that's kind of always been like the argument is like, well, maybe they should have taken Jalen Ramsey. Yeah. I think it's worked out pretty well for them, you know, having one of, if not the best running back in the league over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But like the Cowboys, offensive line, coaching, scheme, overall philosophy, all of those things matter a ton for the running backs in those situations. So I think a lot of the times what ends up happening, and not to take away the talent from a guy like Kareem Hunt, is he gets plugged in Kansas City where he's an absolutely perfect fit and Andy Reid's just an absolute genius of an offensive coach and you get this insane production from day one, you know? And I think that, you know, as good as some of these guys are, when you get them into those types of situations, they can be even better. And I think that that's, you know, kind of the cool thing about the running back position and the cool thing about a team like the Patriots, that you know that they're going to draft somebody and use them properly and all that kind of stuff. You can have that kind of instant impact like what Sony Michel had as a rookie. So it's a fun position. It's not necessarily a loaded position in this year's draft. We are going to get in back into the trenches. That's I love the trenches.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where this draft and where a lot of drafts for New England start and end. You know, I think that really in the defensive and offensive lines is where Belichick really loves to build his team. We're going to talk a whole lot in the lead up in the next month about wide receivers. We're going to talk a whole lot about tight ends. We're going to talk a whole lot about skill position players, the flashy guys, the fantasy football guys, and Bill Belichick is going to come out and draft a guard in the center.
Yeah.
I almost guarantee it's going to happen because that is where he thinks and where he's right. And that's where the football games are really won and lost. Mm-hmm. And you can look no further than last year's playoff run to point that out. The teams with the best offensive and defensive lines were the last teams standing on both sides of the coin. Even though the Patriots didn't have their Aaron Donald type and Trey Flowers was obviously great, but not necessarily on that level. They were fantastic playing together down the stretch as a unit, as a defensive line unit. And obviously we know what the offensive line did, but whether it was the Rams and the Saints or the Patriots and the Chiefs, all four of those teams were loaded on the line of scrimmage. And we talk a lot about Tyreek Hill and we talk a lot about Gronk and all those guys, but it was really the boys up front that were leading the way. So we're going to get back into the trenches. We're going to circle back to offense later on, right before the draft, and talk quarterbacks and really kind of hammer home some of the guys that potentially could be the heir apparent to Tom Brady. I think Will Greer will probably have about 30 minutes of his own segment on that podcast. So we'll look forward to that. But until then, signing off until next week. For Adam Kirchen, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.